In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Coach Pamela Greshock. Pamela and I speak about what has changed in her training and coaching philosophy over the last 10 to 15 years, the importance of listening to your body, and how to juggle family life and staying fit. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Pamela, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Pamela. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the absolute pleasure of speaking with fitness trainer Pam Greshock. She helps women lose fat, gain muscle, and ditch the diet culture. I'm super excited to speak with you today, Pam. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's super fun to be on somebody else's podcast and does what I do.
Yeah, I would love to just simply start off with, who is Pam? What do you do? What brought you to where you are today?
Well, that's a long story, right? We're all kind of layered. So first and foremost, you know, I'm a mom and I'm a wife in my 40s. And I, like you said, I'm a fitness professional. So I've been in the fitness space for about 25 years. I started in my teens and kind of fell into fitness coaching and personal training. It was never anything that was kind of viewed as a career. You and I might be in the same age bracket. You probably a little, I'm not sure how old are you.
I'm mid-30s, but let's say, okay, so yes, so it's still similar.
But same age bracket, you know, it wasn't like a really big career then. So I just kind of dabbled in it a little bit, had different dreams of doing other things, and then just stayed in fitness. And I did some bodybuilding and did that for about a decade, kind of ran that course a little bit. Did some fitness modeling and did like the expos and shows and did that whole thing. And then I became a mom, had some injuries, you know, it's pretty layered. I didn't really want to do fitness anymore. I thought, you know, I wanted to get out of it, but I don't know your faith or anybody else's faith, but I felt like God was pushing me into fitness more, and he kind of kept me there even against my will. And I got back into fitness, more online fitness, back in about 2018, maybe, in the online world. And then kind of pursued that. And then I also got the opportunity to become a director of an intensive cardiac rehab facility here in the area. And so I do that as well. And my husband, so I guess I could say I co-own a CrossFit gym for about 14 years.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, so much to unpack and dig into. I mean, from bodybuilding to CrossFit, from busy mom to juggling business and your own training, there are a lot of things that I really want to talk to you about. But the first thing that interests me is, what do you promote in terms of training now, or what do you recommend to your clients? Because, I mean, I can assume that when you first started with being a fitness trainer in, I guess, in the 2000s or 2010 sort of time frame, things were very different, probably.
I think 1999 is when I first started really kind of I took on a client, and it was kind of by accident, and it wasn't really like a thing then. And then you know, and then into the early 2000s is when I started to really kind of get into that. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Different.
And I mean, since then, things have changed so much. Like, even just since I got into coaching and when I studied exercise science, 2013 sort of thing, things were very different. First of all, not as many women were strength training. Second of all, then we went through kind of like the big thing of, functional training is everything and CrossFit is everything. And now, I guess for you, it was maybe the other way around with your bodybuilding first. So you had the machines first and maybe then more functional. For me, it was the other way around. But yeah, how do you approach training now? And what do you teach and coach your clients?
Yeah. So what's the difference, right? How did I evolve? I think, you know, of course I went into a traditional bodybuilding world. I was a gym bro through and through. My husband and I met in a gym, of course. And I loved working out with the guys, doing all the things that are kind of promoted now, deadlifting, squat, benching, leg press, all those things when they weren't cool or even really popular. So I just kind of went into the gym, and then I lived the bodybuilding kind of world. And then what happened and how I train now, the difference. So my husband got into CrossFit as I was kind of leaving bodybuilding. I didn't really kind of get into CrossFit. I was having a lot of injuries around that time, surgeries. And I had the whole hormonal disruption from being so lean for so long of my life. I actually didn't have a menstrual cycle for 8 full years. And back then, they didn't really bat an eye too much. They said, at 27, I think you might be in early menopause at 27. I had no uterine lining. So I thought, well, I don't care because I just want to look good. And they don't seem to mind. So anyway, all of those kind of things compiled, got some overuse injuries. Obviously, my body was breaking down. My husband started CrossFit. I never got into it because it just was a really bad time physically for me. And my husband just kind of got into it right when it kind of came out, maybe, I don't know what it was, 2008, probably something like
Something
that.
like that.
And then I took some time off. And during that time, I had surgeries. Lots of them, got pregnant. Even against the doctors, they said I wouldn't get pregnant, but I did because I put on body fat and I stopped training. And I got pregnant, and then I really just started to want to work out again because, of course, that was part of who I was, and I needed to find another way. So that's kind of how I evolved to where I am today. I had always had lots and lots of clients. I group trained my entire life. And when I stayed home after I got injured, I had to stop working. And I thought, I miss my community. I feel isolated. I need to exercise. It's part of who I am. So I started working out at home. And I would try to go to the gym and do the traditional lifts that I used to do and be part of who I used to be. And it just wasn't working. I was too sore to take care of the kids. And I was just generally not responding to that style of training at all. And this was in my late 30s. And I thought there's got to be something different. So I just started doing a little bit every day, all day long. I was home with the kids. At the time, I had one and then two, and I would just do little things. I got a pair of 5-pound dumbbells, and I thought, what would I tell my client to do if they were in the same position years ago? And they wanted to become who I was at that time in my 20s and very fit. And I said, I would just tell them to do anything. So I just started doing anything, and I would do some moves that I could do, and I wouldn't do ones that I couldn't do, and I would just do them all day long. So, all that to say, I started missing the community. Started a Facebook group and started just kind of, I called it consistency over intensity. And I came up with kind of 20-minute workouts. And eventually I started YouTube and I started doing that with my clients, kind of some that missed me or I missed them. And I would just do 20-minute, 2 rounds of everything. And I gradually got stronger without being overly sore. I could still be a mom. I could still function at home. I could still think straight. I wouldn't like stumble down the stairs because my legs were so sore from leg day. And there was just a lot of things I loved about it. And I just kind of created kind of a community. And that's really what I do now with the majority of my clients. I still enjoy being in the gym. I gradually got stronger and courage to go back to the gym some. And I just pretty much go to CrossFit and do pull-ups or maybe some barbell work. But it's not the base of my program at all. The base of my program, I own and co-own a CrossFit gym, have access to every equipment I could need. I'm a director at a cardiac rehab. I have all of the exercise equipment I could need. 90% of my workouts are done in this office space because it's convenient, it's easy, and I love it. So that's kind of where I am today with my training.
I love the take-home message of just make do with what you got, with the time that you have, with where you're at physically, and not necessarily stressing so much about the method, the equipment, even the exercise perhaps is not as relevant as just that you're doing something. So I love, love, love that. And it sounds to me like you have found a good combination between that kind of like functional training versus the machine type training. And is there anything that you have really changed your mind on in regards to, or in comparison to 15, 20 years ago when it comes to training? I mean, in the bodybuilding world, we often hear like, oh, you need to do your cardio as well, or you need to eat within 30 minutes after my workout, or I don't know where you're nowadays, like, ah, no, not really.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with, like you said, like with evolution of just kind of understanding the science of things and really digging into wanting to know why, I think myself and probably you have an advantage of kind of wanting to learn those things and to not fall into that bro science. You know, I grew up with bro science. That's all I knew. I knew strict hardcore bodybuilding. I read the Arnold Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding from cover to cover over and over. To do those type of workouts. And what's changed is, sure, you know, the we used to think, like you said, eat within an anabolic window, and you know, you have to max deadlift, and you have to, you know, do 6 to 8 rep ranges to make any gains, and you know, you have to do these types of splits of exercises. And while those things have their place, and I don't think they're necessarily wrong, because I think that bro science has bits of truth. And I think there's a lot of the things within that that does work. I think it kind of gets twisted, like the game of telephone. Like somebody says something and they just trickle it down, and kind of wrong at the end, but kind of not too wrong. So I think the biggest thing would be the anabolic window that changed the fasted versus unfasted cardio. I never came from a bodybuilding world. Thankfully, I hired a coach very early on in my career. And I worked with him through my entire career, never changed coaches, never coached top, had one coach. I have one person that helps me now, which I would consider my second coach in all of my years of training. Pretty loyal. But I like to be a complete package. And I think that people that kind of coach hop around and think it's next best shiny thing, and they lack the consistency to stay with somebody. So I was lucky that I found somebody even then. As a professional, to say cardio is important. You want to look like an athlete, you got to train like one. And he had all of his bodybuilders working out with his football players and, you know, doing cardio and doing boot camps and the traditional bodybuilding lifts. So I was very fortunate to come across somebody and a mentor like that, to never kind of fall trap of the bulk and the lean and the cut and, you know, that kind of thing. So that I think is different, fasted cardio versus not fasted cardio. Anabolic window, I think it doesn't matter. I used to think that carb cycling or low carb was the best way to get ready for competitions. You know, there's a lot of kind of myths around that, even still to this day in the bodybuilding industry. I see, even because I'm still a judge, that I still kind of hear floating around. I'm like, isn't that like 20 years ago information? So I think those would be the changes for sure.
Love it. No, great, great insights as well. And I like what you said about the there being some aspect of quote unquote truth to the bro science. I mean,
Always.
there's some obviously it works. People have gotten very lean with it and so on, but it often lacks the practicality or adherence aspect that we, as in the people that work with a lot of Gen Pop, deal with, you know, need to disperse because if they're then like, oh, but I heard I need to eat 6 meals a day, or but I heard I need to train fasted, although I feel nauseous. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't really apply here. Let's just, you know, see what works for you.
I like that too, is the 6 meals a day. And I think that's one of the biggest myths to bust, especially when you come into, I was just talking to my husband about this the other day, how I'm not quite with the 20 and mid 30 girls, and I'm not quite with the 45 to 60. I'm in this middle range. And it's you know, so I think you might be there too, where we're not quite connected with either of those groups solely, where we can understand a little bit of each. And I think one of the biggest myths that come from the top of there and the other side would be we have to eat several small meals a day to stroke the metabolism. I used to believe that too, because that's what was thought, and it kind of made sense at the time. And so that's not true. And it's one of the biggest myths that I think I bust with my own clients, and they love it. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah, you can eat one big meal a day or five or six. It really doesn't matter. I would prefer not to eat 150 grams of protein in one sitting, but by all means, if that's what you want to do, you can do it. So I think that's one of the biggest things that people are very happy about. When they learn that you don't have to stick to that kind of strict adherence of, you know, packing that food, and you can be a little bit more lenient with the sustainability of different dietary protocols. But with that, I will say too, that bodybuilding is a sport and it is treated as such. And I know I've looked at your page and kind of what you do, and you kind of live this more sustainable lifestyle, but you and I are fitness professionals, and it's easy for us to say, yeah, go work out. It's part of what we do. It's a lot harder for other people to just do that sometimes. But when people look at this kind of unrealistic expectation of a bodybuilder as a competitor, as their goal body, I think that they miss the point that bodybuilding is a sport, and it is a lifestyle that people choose to adopt, and it is a very strict adherence to a lifestyle. That is, every professional bodybuilder of any kind that knows what they're doing will tell you the last 2 to sometimes 10 weeks is not that healthy. And you're riding the line of being unhealthy. And they know that they will not sustain that look forever. But there's so, now that's kind of become a little more mainstream, there's a lot of people that kind of use that as their goal, and they often get very disappointed. And or they go to a competitor, get a plan from them, and realize that that's not the way they can live. And then they get very discouraged. They may give up, but they also give up on coaches because they feel as if that's what's going to be given to them, and that's the only way to get there. So they just throw their hands up and say, forget it. You know, so
That is so
I
sad
think.
and so true. Unfortunately, you have mentioned so many great points, because we can indeed take a lot of positive things or motivational things away from the bodybuilding world in the sense of how consistent they train. And I think if a Gen Pop person even takes that away, like, hey, the consistency matters more than, as you say, the intensity. Like, I don't need to train for an hour and a half and cardio and blah, blah, blah. But if I do my 20 minutes of movement per day or whatever, I'm going to get very far if I do that consistently for the next 5 to 10 years. And on the same front, though, maybe acknowledging that being super, super lean is not sustainable. So that we can also learn from the bodybuilding world. However, you mentioned many coaches don't talk about that. Many coaches don't say the look that you're looking for is not that attainable. You can be lifestyle lean, you can have visible definition, but not to the point of like single digit body fat levels for females or anything like that, or even below 15 or 10. So yeah, I think that's a really, really good point there. And I like also what you said about not coach hopping, because there is something beautiful about when you can just fully trust your coach. And likewise for the coach, if they know you that well, where they're like, we know this is coming up. I know that you're inclined to do XYZ. I know your body's going to respond in this and that way. And you're like, oh, you know me better than I know myself. Awesome.
Yeah,
That's
I see that
lovely.
with like coaches need coaches, and you know, again, I have my own coach that I am accountable to all the time for small kind of goals and large goals, because it's nice to have a sound mind outside of yourself to say you're not doing anything wrong, you don't need to switch anything. And you know, and people also forget too with the bodybuilding component, most people wouldn't do what it takes to look like that anyway. And if they did, oftentimes it's much more isolating and sad that they don't realize all the things that they have to give up to look that way. But there is a very big genetic component to some of the top level elite bodybuilders and athletes anyway, and all across the board. There's a genetic component that they have the genes to look that way more sustainably than other people at a healthy range. Sure, I could push my body to do a lot more things, but it would push back at me. There would be all kinds of signs and symptoms, especially as you age, as you know. And just some people just can't be that way. You and I will do the same workouts and the same nutrition and look completely different based on our backgrounds and our genetics.
Absolutely. No, that is so true. Yeah, I do want to shift gears a little bit, because you have such wonderful information on your page as well about how to be fit, sustainably fit, and healthy with a family, with a business, just doing it all. But yeah, what advice do you have for your clients, for anyone listening, in terms of how to still make yourself a priority and how to quote unquote juggle it all, like meal prep and making time for exercise and so on.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's one of my favorite things to teach, because I think probably you and I both have the same kind of clientele in that age range, especially with me being in a professional field and then a fitness professional and mom and all of those things. And how do you juggle it all? You don't do it all, that's for sure. You have a team, and your family is your team and your unit. The people around you that your decisions affect need to know kind of what's important to you. And me being healthy is at that top priority, because obviously we can't serve from an empty cup, as cliche as it is. And they just know those things are important. So that's number one. Number two is being very flexible. And that's the difference between a strict bodybuilding kind of style. Anybody can be strict. It's really easy. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek, like anybody can be strict if you make your mind to just toughen through it. But it's a lot harder to be flexible, to say my family gets sick, I might miss a workout, I might not have the food on hand. It's that kind of thing, to be a little more flexible, to understand that nothing's linear. So you're going to have a plan put in place, but it might change along the way, and be okay with some of those changes, and have a plan B sort of. If I can get my workout in, great. I'm going to make sure I get some steps and some push-ups and some squats, and have that little bit of, yes, I'm going to do this. So that's kind of how I put myself first. And I enjoy my kids seeing me have a goal, whether it's for work. They know that I don't dread work. I don't hate going to work. I don't always want to go. But I love what I do, and I love helping people. I love feeling well, and I love seeing them feel well too. So creating an environment of support around me, and this is what I teach to my clients as well, is to let everybody that's important to you know what's in, like around you, know what's important to you. And then just kind of time blocking as well as you can, and saying, okay, this is my time. This is the time for social media. This is the time for my work. This is the time for the sports. There's really no way around being organized, and just making that a priority, and knowing that it's okay to have priorities for yourself, that you don't have to fully give yourself away, all the time, all the hours, that it is okay to be yourself for yourself, because it makes you a much better wife, mom, director, or what have you.
That's so well put, and the point of organization and planning, I'm big on that. I think people underestimate how much they can or how much more they can achieve with a little bit of pre-planning, because it's, of course, if you're in the moment and it's so busy, you're like, oh, I don't have the time to plan. But if you set on a Sunday or whenever else, if you set some time aside to get organized for the week, you are saving so much more time during the week, and not just time, but also freeing up mental space and just going about your day in a happier, more relaxed way, as opposed to feeling so scatterbrained and, oh, what do I want to do next? And starting here something 5 minutes and this 5 minutes, and just wasting time that way by not being very efficient. So I really, really like that. Do you have a particular organizing system? Like, do you just use Google Calendar, or do you have a specific day for your meal prep? How do you do your planning?
So I like to write things down. I just have a paper planner. I always say that I'm going to get into the digital space with that, like the shared calendars. But my husband and I write it all down, and he's really good about planning the kids' sports. He coaches some of them. We're very fortunate to live the life we live, where I drop the kids off, he's working and coaching, I go to work, he comes home, picks the kids up, I get home. So we kind of have this kind of systematic team effort. But he is a lot more organized than me with stuff, so I'm fortunate. But he will organize all those sports. It'll be listed on the calendar. I have my own calendar, and that's it. The biggest thing, and I think that you speak this message too, I'm sure, is when it comes to your fitness and your nutrition, to have a coach. I will always stand behind coaches, of course, because that's what I do. I know the benefit I can provide to my clients, and I know the benefit that coaches provide me. And having a plan for your workouts and a general idea of what your nutrition will be. Because I think it's too easy, like you said, to say, I don't really have time and I don't know what I'm going to do. But, you know, when I have my workout set in front of me and I know that this day belongs to this workout and this day belongs to this workout, it's not that confusing. And if you miss one, they're only 30 minutes long. You can, that's my job as a coach to help my own clients figure that out. You either just skip that day because one day is not that big of a deal. But if that becomes consistent, then you start to say, okay, well, where can I move this around? And then you already have your plan. You know, I think that's very underestimated when people just pick random workouts from YouTube and they're just like, oh, I don't really have time today. I'm not going to do that. But when you know what you're going to do and you're going in to do it, there, you don't have to think about it. And like you said, it clears that mental space. And I want to talk about that too, is that I learned along the way at a very young age, bodybuilding taught me structure and delayed gratification. And that is something that has been brought into my everyday career, my life in general, patience, hard work without seeing immediate results. But also having all that kind of, you know, pre-planned and to know kind of, you know, what you're doing. So.
Yeah, delaying gratification. I mean, it's so, we hear more and more about it all. I think nowadays it's like all over the media, but in the end, we still all fall for it, whether that's with our cell phones, whether that is for food, or oh, I'll do that later. I'll get my three workouts in this week on the weekend or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then it turns into nothingness. But yeah, just doing the hard things now and kind of pushing the easy, the comfort zone a little bit further, it's going to feel so much better also. But yeah, I think it sounds great that you and your husband have a wonderful team communication. I think for any couples out there, that's such a good reminder to not just feel like you need to be doing it all. And I'm sure you're teaching your kids also to be part of that team, to be tidying up their rooms, to be putting their clothes into the dirty basket or whatever,
yeah,
so that you have less work to do. And I think in the end, that's how we can long-term be successful, by making it a team effort and still acknowledging that everybody needs to do their own things, because your kids get to do sports. So you should get to do your own workout as well. And so does your husband, and everybody's the happiest if you're collaborating in that wonderful way. But yeah, I'm also quite old school. I do write many things down. I like using Google Calendar. That's the only online thing that I will be using. But yeah, aside from that, lists are great. So nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. You mentioned earlier that particular kind of age bracket that you and I are in, more like 35 to 40 and a little bit upwards. So where people are starting to see some perimenopause symptoms potentially, maybe not yet, but you're not really in your 20s anymore, so you get a little bit more sore. I saw in one of your posts where you spoke specifically about that, like what changes, especially for us women in that age bracket, and what sort of difficulties can we expect and how can we deal with them?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm kind of in the mix with everybody else, and I'm so grateful for people like, you know, like I had on my podcast, you know, like Dr. Vonda Wright, and, you know, and then of course you had him on your podcast, Bill Campbell, and, you know, people that are kind of pioneering in that space. And I think we're fortunate to have so much information in front of us. And I do think I have a slight advantage just kind of experiencing what I did in my 20s when they told me I was in perimenopause. And that's the first time I ever even heard of anything like that. And kind of under, I felt all of the things that people say in perimenopause, you know, and I mean, I've noticed the difference from 35 to 38, 38 to 40, 40 to 42, and now into 43, your body works different and it, you don't have as much leeway and everybody is going to be different. You know, back in my 20s, when I had those symptoms, it was joint pain and they tested me for fibromyalgia and even MS because I had so much brain fog and things just weren't, I couldn't lift my hands over my head. I could not put dishes away. I couldn't walk around the block. It was just crazy stuff, all chalked up to basically my low lack of estrogen and progesterone. So I can recognize what kind of that feels like going in. And I think just for myself, noticing just that difference. Yeah, I got a little more belly fat. Wow, it's a little harder to lose those couple pounds that I wanted to lose for vanity reasons. And I have more brain fog, you know, those types of things. And how do you combat that? Well, you just go back to your basics and you take a look at what's going on and you make sleep a priority. and you make hydration a priority and you make stress management a priority, and then you trickle in all of the other things. And I wanted to mention too, from before I lost my train of thought, my phone was telling me something. When you have your list and your coach and your program set in front of you, just like you said, it takes away the decision fatigue and it allows you to be much more present in the areas that are important in your life. Yes, exercise is important, but we look at it around our house that it's like brushing your teeth. It's something you do every day. It's not a luxury, although it's a privilege, but it is something that is necessary at some form every single day. Intentional movement. Now the kids might go out and bat their, you know, use their bats or jump on the trampoline. I don't care, but it is, that's fun, you know, but so it takes the decision fatigue when you have a plan so that it's already there. You don't have to think about it. You literally just have to push play. And what I tell my clients, I'm like, I understand it's hard to push play sometimes. I don't necessarily like to read, but I know I need to read more books in my hands. I'm trying to be a good reader. So I have to remind myself every day, read your book, put a sticky note, read your book. I tell them, put a sticky note on their mirror, everywhere they look, all over the place, all over, every day, just have it. And it just says, push play, go do your workout. Push play means go push play on your workout. If you need that reminder, and I tell them, put it everywhere. And I tell them to write that down. And I tell them to write their goals down every single day. So they see it in writing every day, not just one time in a book, not just one time in a questionnaire. I need you to see it every day, pen to paper, from your brain to the paper, look at it. And if you need to, say it out loud. You know, it takes the decision fatigue off. It clears your mind of clutter. Organizing your home, like you said, tidying up places, that is a big deal too, because if you kind of, you lose that sense of like, everything just seems scattered, at least to me. And I've noticed, you know, and it helps you stay a little bit more organized. Yeah.
I think that's such a great point. And on top of that, like the reminders, I love just using habit stacking. So like, what are you already doing? And what can you tie that in with? Most of the time, like that makes it, the consistency with that makes it easier. If you're like, okay, every time before I brush my or every evening before I brush my teeth, I'm going to read my 5 pages. Then that is fixed together. You know when to do it. It's no debate in your head. Oh, should I read in the morning? Oh, no, let's do it later. Maybe after lunch. Oh, no. You know, there is a fixed time. And like the way, same way you can go about exercise. If you say before I have my lunch, when the kids are at school, and after I've tidied up, I'm going to do my workout, or, you know, whenever it fits in together with something else, I think that's very helpful. And on top of what you said about the benefits of coaching, of course, I'm on the same page as you, but I think more on top of all of that is also just the accountability. Even if you mess up, even if you have a week where something is off, where everyone was sick, where you didn't track your nutrition, where you didn't get your workouts, and at least you know on a Sunday you need to tell Pam or Lisa, oh no, I didn't, I'm so sorry, but I'm planning on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, this coming week. If you didn't have that accountability, it would be easy to be like, oh yeah, I didn't work out, I'm going to try next week. But you don't have a plan. You don't have someone who's like, right, let's make that happen, who's staying behind you and is just encouraging you and motivating you. And I think for us coaches, that's really where the benefit of coaching still comes in for anybody who has, even if you've had a coach for 10 years, for 20 years, very, very important in my opinion. But yeah, in terms of how to get the kids more involved with nutrition too, I would love to hear your approach with that, because I have heard from some clients saying, oh, I don't want to weigh out my food in front of the kids. Or what should I say when they ask when I weigh out my food? Or what should I say when they ask, why is mommy eating something different? Or like anything like that. Do you have experiences with that?
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point. So, you know, when I got pregnant, I was still kind of having lousy thoughts about myself. And I've shared this story a lot. I promised myself I would never say anything bad about myself out loud again. And it changed my life, because I was very depressed after bodybuilding, gaining weight, not knowing who I was. You know, I saw doctors and told them, I said, if I need medication, give it to me, because I feel horrible about myself. I didn't know what was going on, all of that. And I thought, I was feeling lousy every time somebody gives you, I'm fat or I'm whatever. And I thought when I was pregnant, God laid on my heart, like, you can't say that out loud. And I'm like, you're right. So I stopped saying things about myself out loud that was negative, number one. And if I couldn't say anything nice about myself, I just didn't say anything at all. But I would always look at one positive thing I liked, and it was always my collarbone. I liked to just look at my collarbone. I share that story over and over because, yeah, I didn't like what was going on with my body, but I knew I wouldn't stay there. So that was important. And that was that message for me. My husband and I are in a fitness industry. They grow up in a gym. Thankfully, it's a CrossFit gym where there's all shapes and sizes and doing workouts, and you're celebrated for being strong and showing up. And they know what I did with bodybuilding and whatnot. And I would never want them to experience some of the, you know, the negative things that maybe you and I experienced going through some of the early stages of fitness coaching. And the biggest thing for me that, again, that was laid on my heart when I prayed about this and talked about this was to educate without isolating. So number one, my main mission for my kids is to never say anything about my body at all. Even if I feel negative or positive, I might say, oh, I look strong. Or, wow, look at my muscle, or, you know, something fun. But they'll already receive that later on down the road if they're going to experience those things. So it was always a place of confidence. So by the time I had my son, I had spent 9 months of not saying anything bad about myself. And I certainly wouldn't say them around him because I would speak to myself the same way I would speak to my kids. And in regards to nutrition, again, education without isolation. So the first, I nursed my kids till they were four each. It was a choice. I didn't plan to do that way, but it just worked out. It was cheap. It helped me lose weight. And it was nutritious. And they got a lot of flavor profiles through, you know, her. But at the end of the day, we just don't eat fast food. We don't eat a lot of the ways that some of the, you know, ways that we would choose not to teach. So it wasn't really us saying no or yes. It was just them not seeing that. And sure, they do, you know, they've had fast food here and there too, but it's not an everyday occurrence and it's not anything we just eat. It's not that we're against it. It's just they don't see it. And the education without isolating part, I love to share, even with my clients at cardiac rehab, because they're on their own kind of mission to change their health. And to change is hard for other people to see somebody they love change. With my kids, I never wanted them to judge other families or other kids for eating things that maybe they don't eat. So again, I allow them Doritos and chips and things, but they also know. I don't care if they know it's a big deal. You have to eat fruits and vegetables because guess what? If you're not pooping right, you're not eating enough fiber. If you're not strong enough, you're not sleeping enough, and you probably don't have enough protein. And all that pizza that you ate for 3 days is why you have a stomach ache. You know, so I kind of let them figure it out. And it's not even a big deal. Like we, you know, they know how to read nutrition labels. They're in the kitchen with me when I can. Some days we're not perfect and they're eating, you know, pizza rolls. so it's a very, I feel like it's a very good balance. And had I not gone through everything that I did after bodybuilding, I would not be the mom I am today because I was so rigid and structured and didn't know anything different. I thought carrots were full of sugar and I wouldn't eat one, you know? And so I would hate to portray that now, but that's kind of how I get the kids involved is getting them, first of all, in the kitchen, just following by example. They see the food scale. They know I'm weighing out 4 ounces or 5 ounces of protein because I prioritize what I'm putting in my body so I can have strength gains because it's important for my bones and independence later in life. They hear us say those things. If they hear some of their friends, they're getting a little older, 10, 11. Some of those kids say, oh, I'm fat. I'm this. They're already saying that. And I stop those kids if they're at my home. I give them a big hug and I say, okay, first of all, you're strong, you're beautiful. God made you just the way you are. But also fat is tissue. It's adipose tissue. You are also skin, bones, and muscle. So we don't talk about ourselves in the form of I'm hair, you know, I'm bones. So don't call yourself by a tissue. And I think that when you correct that, right away, it's kind of funny and it's silly to think about. But when I say that even to my clients, I'm like, stop the tracks because we don't talk about ourselves and say, I'm fat. I have fat, but I also have all of these other things. So I think that's important. They just understand. We've always talked about the body and the muscle and the structure and being independent. And they have grandparents that they see that are their health is deteriorates and they see the lack of strength and mobility and you know, we don't pass judgment on that either. And we don't say, oh, if so-and-so would have taken care of themselves. No, we say, you know, they can get stronger, but this is why it's important to do these things now. You know, so I think it's real simple conversations.
Yeah, but what a beautiful message, and simple, but yet not easy often, and not often acknowledged. Absolutely. I very much like that you are not is telling your kids the message, you can never have that, you can never have this.
Yeah.
You did say most of the time you don't have fast food, et cetera, at home. You are keeping the good things at home on the counter, et cetera, where they can see it, where they can get involved. But they also don't fear Doritos. They don't think, oh, no, that you can never have that, and shame other kids for eating differently. Yeah. So I think that's a really, really great way to lead by example. And like you said, just to educate them as well, lead with education as opposed to being secretive about it or saying, oh, mom can't have that, or I'm, you know, like I need to lose weight, however, because we pick up so much of our food beliefs, of our body beliefs, by the way that we're watching.
And we never, my husband and I have never said those words, even about our own clients or about us. And we have never said the word diet in our home is whatever you're eating. Mm-hmm. And I would never have wanted my children to be like closet eaters and think that, oh, you know, shameful that I can't eat chocolate. Now, if they ask for the third cupcake, I'm going to stop them and say, yeah, you probably don't need three because you're going to get a stomachache. Has nothing to do with the weight that they, you know, could get from that, which is not a concern of mine either. But, you know, so there are boundaries where when they say, and my daughter, she's more of a sweet tooth. It's kind of interesting to see like the difference of the two kids and just very, just preferences. She's more of a sweet tooth. And she'll say sometimes, I already had, you know, two cupcakes yesterday. You know, I want to eat ice cream and cupcakes today, but I think I'll just choose ice cream because I might give myself a stomachache if I eat too much sugar too many days in a row. Fair. I think that's a fine observation for yourself because you have to be athletic at your sport and you don't want your stomach hurting and you don't want to not be able to poop tomorrow.
Exactly. And it just shows also that she's in tune with her body, listening to her body, which is something I think many adults included are disconnected from just by the way of the way our food is engineered these days, or stress, mm-hmm. or other things. And yeah, that actually leads me to another question I want to ask you. This is going to be the last question. I want to respect your time, but just in general, it is often hard for us to figure out what our body needs one day, and also when we should push out of our comfort zone. Does that make sense? So like sometimes we might wake up and think, oh, I should be working out today. I don't really feel like it. And then there are certain days where it's good to push through and other days where it's not. So, or even with regards to food, when is it okay to have something that you didn't actually plan to eat, even though, you know, you had something.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do we distinguish between the two?
I think for me, I give myself and my clients the 10-minute rule. If you don't feel like working out, go for 10 minutes. If you usually you'll continue because it's usually just your brain is too full of something else, or you got caught into doing something else and your time, you feel like it would be more valuable somewhere else. If you don't feel like doing it, go for 10 minutes every time. If you still don't feel like it, then just stop. Allow yourself permission to stop because today is not your day. But if you're in the 10 minutes, that's almost halfway through. The majority of the workouts are never longer than 30 minutes for us. Then you might as well just keep going. And so that would be the rule there. And as far as like veering off, we, you know, I teach macros and we really involve every food that you could possibly want. You know, if somebody's in a fat loss phase, which I always recommend, get in and out as quickly as possible. I would say, you know, like you have to kind of stay, you have to make a commitment and you don't have to stay rigid. I want you to have memories over macros. I don't want you to feel as stressed out, like, oh, I can't go out to dinner. Just plan it. You know, I mean, there's lots of ways to do things. So if you're in a short fat loss phase, it might be a little more important to stay a little more around the closer numbers that you and I came up with. But if you're not in a fat loss phase, then you just, you know, eat the food that you want and you should know your portions at that point. And it's not a big deal. So I really like to make sure that that message is always sent home. Like there's nothing that's off limits. Be realistic about, you know, the fat loss phases and the times. Take a look at your schedule a few weeks out to make sure that that works for you and you want to stay with that commitment. And if you go into it and you say, you know, this is just too stressful this time, then we take a step back and say, okay, it's, you know, you're going to work out for the rest of your life. So let's just, you know, pick another time. Not a big deal.
Exactly. No harm in changing your mind. I like that. At the same time, though, no, not hopping in one day this, next day back into the cut, next day I want to grow. So yeah, no, very, very good point. And I guess just going back to what you said in the beginning, thinking about the long-term thing, like how is that going to make me feel tomorrow? Do I still want the cupcake? Yes, absolutely. Okay, cool. I'm going to eat it. But do I feel like it's going to make me feel gross tomorrow? Maybe I'm going to say no because it's the second one for today. So I think that's a very good reminder for ourselves, just always, how is that going to make me feel tomorrow or even later? How am I going to sit with this decision?
Just align with my goals that I have for myself. Is it inherently bad? No. Or is too bad? No. But is it in line with the goals that I have for myself? Nobody is making you do those things. Nobody holding you to those goals aside from yourself and the accountability that you have for me. But even that, if it's not the right time for you, then it's not the right time, and that's okay. We don't always and should never always be chasing fat loss anyway. So yeah, that's kind of how I would do.
I think that's a wonderful closing message, not to consistently chase fat loss. That's not healthy for body or mind. But yeah, Pam, thank you so much for your time, for everything you have shared with us today. I'm going to drop all your handles, et cetera, in the show notes, but you can shout your website, your Instagram, et cetera, anything you have at the moment on out already here. That would be great.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. It's so fun to be on the podcast. You'll have to come on mine. We'll have to have the similar conversation and just chit chat. I love working with other fitness professionals, especially females, because that's always fun, kind of colleagues, right? But as far as my handles, I'm sure you'll post them. Just Pam Grushnok Fitness, and I'm on Facebook, and then YouTube, of course, too. So there's all those channels, and then with my training, that's all going to be linked in my Instagram. And I start with 6 week rounds, and then we move into VIPs where we check in every day. And there's a consistent kind of manner for that too. So yeah.
That sounds awesome. Well, I hope everyone goes and checks it out. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to chatting on your podcast as well. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Pamela. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And one more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.